Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each
other. What I have in my head to the outside world.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of the Speech Science Podcast. I'm Matt Hodd, joined, I guess I'll go from south to north, Michelle Wintering.
Hi.
And Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
Michelle, you're no longer in wherever you were. I was going to say Arizona.
Texas. Was in Texas.
Whatever. It's south. And now you're near the Ohio River Valley. Welcome north.
Yes, I'm actually really close to you now, Matt. I'm only 2 hours and change from Cincinnati.
Yeah, the greater Cincinnati metropolitan tri-state area. And Michael, how is life out there in Philadelphia?
It's good. It's always sunny. Having a good time out here.
Do you get to see Danny DeVito very often?
I wish. I wish I saw him out in the streets.
Have you been to, is there a real Patty's Pub from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
There's a place called Max Tavern, and I'm pretty sure it's owned by that guy.
Ah.
But there's no Patty's Pub. I'm pretty sure the show is filmed in California.
Probably.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, since we last recorded 2 weeks ago, I have been living the dream and regaining whatever version of the 2018 man card you could pretend to have. I've golfed on a Jack Nicklaus golf course. I have rebuilt yard equipment and like bought a bush hog / bush clearer thing, brush clearer. I got a new pair of boots, and I hit 12 bourbon distilleries over the weekend in Kentucky. If there is a 2018 man card to gain, I have pretended to get one over the last week and a half.
I'm pretty impressed, Matt.
Oh, I do not like bourbon, yet I went to the bourbon trail and tried all the bourbons. And if you've never been to a bourbon trail, every tour is the same. And they tell you how bourbon is made. And no, bourbon is not just a Kentucky thing. It's a United States thing. Go America. And the burning sensation you feel when you drink bourbon, it's called a Kentucky hug. So that feeling when like the insides of you are burning, it's Kentucky hugging you. You are hugged by Kentucky.
Matt, I'm now living in Kentucky, so maybe I need to figure out this Kentucky hug.
Yeah, you got
to
try some bourbon. Maybe not while you're still raising little baby Speech Science, but, you know, when you're done feeding him, maybe do the Kentucky hug and bourbon.
There you go. The bourbon trail is right here.
So, Michelle, you've been driving. Anything exciting? Did you get to see any of those sweet roadside attractions?
When you have a little 1-month-old in tow, it's not always feasible to stop where you want to, but we did get to visit some friends along the way. We spent a couple days in Austin area, and then Austin, Texas, and then a night in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Hey!
And then now we are in Kentucky, south of Louisville, and hotel living until we actually just got keys to our house, but don't have all of our stuff, so we can't really move in at the moment.
So, Michelle, how do you pronounce the capital of Kentucky?
Well, you got to say it like you had some bourbon.
So, how would you pronounce the capital of Kentucky?
Louisville.
It's Frankfurt. So,
oh, you screwed me off. I'm so sorry. That's a good one.
That is a dad joke, and you can use that in your first day of clinic.
I like it.
There you go. Michael, what's been going on with you since we've last recorded?
Well, Michelle just had a baby and you did the bourbon trail, so there's no way I could possibly follow those two things up. There's nothing I've done that...
Did you find any new Will Smith paintings in the west side of Philadelphia?
No, but I saw a couple of other street murals that I walked past. I walked past one yesterday that was pretty cool.
What was it?
It was just like a bunch of people like reading or something like that. I can't remember what they were doing, but it was cool.
I like those. I like those street murals because I think it makes the buildings look so much nicer, like especially on like the covering up the old advertisements on the side of buildings.
They do like street mural tours here. Like you can get on a bus and go around and see all the different murals. They're pretty much all over the place.
That'd be pretty cool. You should start one on a Segway and be different.
I could definitely do that.
We did get some emails since last week and my wonderful attack on the straw band. And you can email us. It is speechscience2018@gmail.com. That is a new email for us as we do our street or our switch over to the exceptional education podcast network, the XED. So we are making our way over there. But the two emails are basically one thinks I'm an idiot. It's Tina from Pittsburgh. Oh, I'm sorry. Tina from Pittsburgh agrees with me. Ha, I'm not an idiot. Straw band is dumb. Abby from Little Rock, she thinks I'm an idiot. So if you want a shout out, and I'm not going to go into any more about Abby because I'm not an idiot, but if you want to email us.
Did she really write that in an email?
Because she says, quote, he says, quote, Matt is an idiot about the straw band. He doesn't care about the environment. I agree with you, Michelle, and you, Michael, on your views. So,
which is interesting because I was pretty middle ground with you there, Matt. Not quite the soapbox, but.
You know what? Maybe just people remember the fact that I think the straw band is still stupid. And I will be making them with my 3D printer and selling them. Thanks to that article you sent me, Michael.
I want to give a shout out.
Was it you, Michelle?
No, I was going to say I thought of you, Matt, because I was at a restaurant in Austin with our friends. And it's this really hippie little restaurant that's super environmental and all that.
Yeah.
And they had straws available. And I went, ooh, okay, let's see. But I picked up the straw and it was completely compostable.
No, that's dumb. That's not a straw. That's a piece of paper.
It wasn't paper. It wasn't paper. It wasn't those paper straws that like melt when you drink out of them.
Not a straw. Even the for everyone at home.
Holding up a roll of a piece of paper right now.
Not a straw. I could still suck liquid from it, but not a straw.
But Matt, it wasn't paper.
Well, how does it compost then?
I don't know. I need to look this up now because I was amazed. It was a plastic straw. At least it felt plastic.
I just want to shout out Abby quick. Shout out to Abby. Shout out to Little Rock.
Just because they think I'm an idiot. All right.
Abby, comment on the Facebook page. We'll give you a shout out. Come join the pod sometime, Abby.
Speaking of that, head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, or on Twitter, hashtag speech science, or on the Facebook's speech science. You know, on the straw thing, though, I got so made fun of in Kentucky on the bourbon trail because I do drink my bourbon with a straw mixed with Coke. And evidently, those are the two worst things you can mention to somebody in a distillery, because the only two ways that you're supposed to drink bourbon is either neat with no water or ice or water to make it flavorful. When I mentioned I drink mine with Coke, the lady's eyes almost bugged out of her head, and she asked if I was serious. And at that point, I took the social cue to say, no, just kidding. I like it straight. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I want to get out of here.
You can use that in one of your improv sessions.
Right.
What would you do?
Norden.
If you were on the bourbon trail.
But shout out to Buffalo Trace Bourbon for the guy telling me, you drink your bourbon any way you want. I bought some moonshine from that guy. So there you go.
There you go. Matt, I just looked it up. There are compostable plastic straws.
Oh, well, then I'm okay with that. Coming up on today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about ADHD severity and video game addiction. We're also going to talk a little bit about decline of play in preschoolers and how is that related to social interaction for patients with dementia, and also which NBA star has just dropped multiple millions of dollars to create a new school, a new public school. You're going to find out around the bend. You're listening to Speech Science.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk,
the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know why. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're gonna go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speed Science, episode 45. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michelle Wintering and Michael McLeod.
Hey, hey.
What's up?
So, starting off, we're going to start off like an easy discussion, I guess, this whole week. Pretty straightforward, but this is interesting. This coming out of the Attitude, A-D-D-I-T-U-D-E, mag.com. There's a study linking ADHD severity and its ability to predict video game addiction severity. What do you guys think of this? Like, I never really thought about how ADHD and video games are related. I just assumed that, maybe incorrectly, that video games could cause ADHD.
Yeah, so this article really summed up my life for the past probably year and a half, 2 years. Working with my students and my clients within my clinic, I specializing in executive functioning. Executive functioning really goes hand in hand with ADD, ADHD. If you have ADHD, you will have executive function issues. But you can have executive function disorder and not be diagnosed with ADHD. But the two disorders do go hand in hand, and most commonly are comorbid together. Go ahead.
I'm an idiot. What is the difference between ADHD and ADD?
ADHD is the hyperactivity version of the ADHD. That's when you will see kids being much more impulsive and much more behavioral. The ADD is more of a focus disorganization piece, but the ADHD is where you're going to see more of a hyperactivity.
So like that's the ones that are unable to focus and like running around and doing that kind of stuff?
Yes, much more behavioral, more difficulties with that response and inhibition piece.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to clarify where my brain was.
So with this article really ties hand in hand the ADHD and the video game addiction. And there's still so many misconceptions about ADD, ADHD. And I've worked with so many people, whether they be, you know, social workers, ABA, OT, PT, that still fall along that line of these misconceptions of ADHD. And I remember I was, you know, trying to explain to a parent, I was working with a probably a 14, 15-year-old, mainly treating him for apraxia of speech. Mm-hmm. I really had noticed some issues in ADHD. So I had let the parent know, there's some issues going on here with ADHD and executive functioning. And I remember the behavior therapist came back and stated, You know, I don't see how he can have issues with executive functioning, ADHD. I've watched him play video games for hours, and the way he manages the characters and the way he's able to organize the game and follow through on the missions and do these things. And I had to explain to her, you know, video games are a massive, massive preferred task where you're able to really sink yourself into the game and really be a part of it. And it's, you know, it's the same thing as being addicted to your cell phone and being on social media all day or texting all day. And it's very important that when you think of ADHD, ADD, executive functioning, you really truly know the difference of preferred, non-preferred, because you're not going to see the symptoms and the signs of these disorders and these deficiencies with preferred tasks such as, you know, screen time, Xbox, phones, any sort of those things. So this article really is something I've been dealing with, and with the new online battle royale MMO
Fortnite.
Yeah, there you go. So with these things, and now parents are paying people to train their kids in Fortnite.
What?
Did you guys see that?
I saw that.
Yes. They're literally, it has become such a social thing. Parents feel like my kid cannot make friends. My kid cannot socialize unless they're good at Fortnite, unless they're competent at Fortnite. If they're playing and they're dying in the first 5 minutes, they're not going to socialize. They're not going to be able to play as a team. And if they're doing the squad version and they're dying too fast and hurting their team, they're going to be social outcasts. It's become a serious, serious issue. I've had kids be late to my sessions because their parents can't get them off Xbox. I've had kids just crazy behavioral issues because of Fortnite. So this is an issue that's going to continue to be in the forefront.
And Fortnite is the one where, like you said, that you play with a group of people online, right? You can talk to them and...
So basically it's this game where 100 people are on this bus and the bus parachutes over this island and everyone parachutes down onto an island and last man standing wins.
That sounds awesome.
That's the game.
Yeah.
Right. That sounds kind of fun, actually.
We're going to be pulling Matt off of Fortnite into the podcast next week.
I get addicted to video games very easily, actually.
Now, I was going to throw in real quick, just because I've noticed this with the clinic of having to code things differently. I've had to pay close attention to what codes I'm putting down for ADHD or ADD because of the different types. And I believe there's three. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, the hyperactive, and then there's one that's, I think, inattentive.
Yes.
Hyperactive, inattentive, and then combined. And so it's important, just a quick note to say, because it was a learning curve for me in the clinic to remember, I can't just put any code for ADD or ADHD. I need to pay attention to what their actual diagnosis is.
Yes. So that's really where the symptoms lie and what's really inhibiting them the most. You know, does it fall across the attention? Or is it more of the organization piece? Is it more of the initiation piece? You know, there's so many levels to ADHD and executive functioning. And if they're stuck on the Xbox and they can't initiate homework, you're going to see that in the initiation. If they're glued to the Xbox and they're ignoring the world around them, that's the inattentive.
Now, Mike, do you see, just this is my curiosity, in your practice with executive functioning, do you see more of, say, the inattentive type possibly, because that is the organization and the distraction and not paying attention to details sort of thing? Or is there any difference? I know that's anecdotal, but.
Honestly, the vast majority I've seen is issues with organization. Kids just not being able to organize their internal language to perform in social situations, in a more slower paced, structured classroom situation. There's just to be able to organize their internal thoughts, their internal language, to be able to perform in those non-preferred, unstructured tasks. Basically, you know, whether it be lunchtime, being at the lunch table, or being able to focus on a very specific task in the classroom. That's really been the biggest issue, is them being able to slow their mind and be able to perform at something where the gratification is not instant.
Mm-hmm. And where, like you said, it's not a strongly preferred task.
Exactly. Which is basically at this point, everything but Xbox.
Yeah.
So in that situation, would you target, so let's say you've got a student or a patient that's addicted to video games, and it's either addicted to video games by, you know, anecdotal evidence or real evidence, and also ADHD. Which one do you start with? Like, what would a basic treatment, the first step of basic treatment go?
Well, the biggest thing is when you have a student who is glued to the Xbox, glued to video games, and just not doing their homework, not performing at school, not being social, not doing any of those things. The number one thing you have to do with any of this work is, of course, with any speech therapy, you build the rapport, you build the relationship. And then after that, the biggest thing is you have got to increase their intrinsic motivation towards these non-preferred tasks. You have to get them to be motivated to socialize, to do other things besides Xbox. That's the biggest thing, is they're not going to do anything. They're not going to do anything unless you find a very specific way to motivate them to do it. And many times you do have to work with the parents to limit the screen times or have them earn the screen times. And that's been one of the biggest struggles that I've had to deal with, is there are so many parents that are just not willing to fight that fight and to go through that with their child. You know, I've had parents say, I feel like he's going to hate me. I can't deal with these behaviors. I would rather him play the game than have him scream and yell and cry. So that's the biggest thing is, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I earned video game time by playing, and and games weren't online then. They weren't as addictive. So whether you have to work with the parents or you have to work one-on-one with the student to develop a plan or a program, you have to get very, very creative in how you work towards fostering that motivation.
You made me think of this, but what are the both of your thoughts, being that I know Matt, for example, you love video games as well. I've heard parents say, especially with Fortnite and the online social interactions, that they see or think there is benefit, I don't know what the research shows, to that online interaction in the everyday in-person world. And they think that in some way that's getting the social interaction.
I've heard that exact same thing probably every day for the past couple of months.
And that's why I want your
parents,
take on this.
Yeah. Parents saying that to me, well, like when I work with them to tell them, look, you need to limit screen time, have them earn it. They'll say, well, this is how kids are interacting these days. This is social interaction. And I always let them know, I say every time, if it is a positive social interaction, it is a small fraction of what they need. And look at what they are doing and look at what they are not doing. If you have a student who's getting a small fraction of social interaction from playing Fortnite, and you're looking at that as a positive thing, yet they're not doing their homework, they have borderline failing grades, they're not doing anything after school besides playing games, then no, that's not a positive social interaction. Yes, they're talking to their friends, and yes, they're socializing, but what are they getting out of it? Are they going out? Are they getting exercise? Are they making actual relationships? Are these actual interpersonal relationships? Are they doing better in school? Are they doing varied activities after school? No. So I understand them saying that it's a new age of kid and this is positive social interactions, but it is an absolute fraction of what you need during this crucial, crucial time to have meaningful experiences.
I like how you put that, because that's important for me to be able to say, like, from a speech pathology executive functioning perspective, how do I approach this with parents? And so I like how you describe that it could be positive, but it's a small, small piece of their overall social interaction.
So real quick, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, Michael and Michelle, but like just anecdotally, like I do see a small positives. For example, myself, like I can actually sit down and socialize with friends that are all over the country that we grew up together, but we built those bonds before we were jumping online. And I think that's where the confusion happens. Sometimes, like, I'll see some of my bowlers. They'll play online video games with each other, but they're also socializing in person at the bowling alley. And I'm not missing work to play video games, and they're not missing school to play video games. I mean, there's a night where I do stay up until 4 a.m. because I didn't pay attention to what time it was trying to beat a level, and all of a sudden it's 4 a.m. But I mean, anecdotally, I see where there's small positives, but it's not, you know, we're not blowing off our responsibilities to sit playing video games all day.
Yes, the key word there is small. The key word there is the small positives. That's really what it is. And you, my friend, are a grown man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've spent the years building those relationships, drinking bourbon with your friends.
Now, question though, is it, and maybe this is outside your scope, but Michael, I'm going to ask you anyway. Is it the online screen time? Because what if it's like kid with autism A or ADHD is kid A, and kid B may or may not have ADHD, but they're playing the game together in the same room, so then they still have to have those face-to-face conversations? Or is it just the screen time in general? Or,
well, that's the thing, is these kids are not playing in the same room. They're playing on the internet. I have, with all of my kids with video game addiction, ADHD, executive functioning, they're never in the same room together.
I got
they're
you.
Never in the same house. They're never on the same block as each other. They're constantly, it's online gaming. They're wearing the headphones so they can hear each other. They can talk to each other, but that's the extent of it. There is in no way any social interaction.
Is it similar to the idea of like hiding behind Facebook or Twitter to make obnoxious comments? There's just like a lack of connection between the communication intent and the reaction or whatever.
I think there are definitely some correlations there. No doubt about it.
Man, Mike, we found like the perfect article for you this week.
I'm the one who sent it to you.
Oh, okay. Well, you're the executive functioning expert.
Thank you. Thank you.
We do want to hear from you, and I would love to continue this conversation, but we do have a couple other things to get to. So send us an email over at speechscience2018 @gmail.com, or you can head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. On there, you got our phone number, 503-345-6740, or hit us with the hashtag #SpeechScience, and we will find you on the internet. So a little bit different, yet also related. This is a little bit of an older article, The Decline of Play in Preschoolers and the Rise in Sensory Issues. Not really surprising that I guess the more time we take away from the kids in preschool and kindergarten for recess and force them into the classroom, we're seeing negative reactions.
This article pops up. I mean, this one in particular, I think, is from 2015, and I think I've seen it pop up every 6 to 12 months.
I believe it.
On my social media, if not more frequently, where it comes up between all the PTs, OTs, and SLPs that I know, as special educators, too. But I do think there really is something to that. And even, have you guys heard of Brain Gym? There was a big push
at
school I was at before about using Brain Gym strategies for kids before, at the beginning of class, at the end of class, to help them, you know, increase their attention or settle out down. And Matt, I think you and I had a joint patient in grad school, if I remember right, who we would do wheelbarrow walks with.
Oh, yeah.
Down before the session. And it was a huge, huge help. And I think we forget too often. We get tunnel vision in our given professions, whether it's education and us as SLPs too, that we sometimes forget the connection between the physiological and every other part of us. And so I think the physical side of it is so important.
I'm split as a parent in general on situations like this. We're paying money to send my oldest to preschool. And last year he went to half day, and this year he's going to full day, and the year after, or next year, he'll go to kindergarten. And you know, we went out and bought all those books about, you know, kindergarten preparedness, and I'm trying to teach him sight words and doing all that. And I'm split because I see the positives in teaching them all that. But at the same time, I never see more interaction than there's a park up here called Armco Park. And all it, and there's one of the little playground areas, and all it is a 12-foot high dirt mound with rocks. There is a wood like maze. There is a single rope bridge, like one where you have your hands on a rope and your feet are on a rope and you gotta shimmy across a creek. And there's like a creek, and it and you know, there's sticks. And I'll take my boys up there and, you know, make them leave their toys in the car and watch them learn to play and run around and jump and do all that. And I'm seeing, you know, what was it? There were other kids up there the other day. And my oldest, Maya Michael, worked with another kid, and they turned an upside down log into a train. And they made all the parents and all the other kids sit on the train. And my son wasn't the engineer. He was the guy taking tickets and asking people what drinks they wanted. And seeing
what drinks, that's great.
Yeah, he was like, what do you want to drink? Okay, sir. And it's seeing that social interaction where if he would have brought his, you know, Iron Man figures into the park, they never would have socially interacted that way. So I guess I'm split as a parent, you know, and I'm putting my, I'm not even putting my therapist hat on there of what's more important, me taking my kid out to play in the dirt with strangers, or do I sit at home and get him, you know, drilling flashcards and doing that kind of thing.
And how often have you guys seen the very connected article where it says, you know, so-and-so school sees massive improvements in behavior by tripling recess time.
Right.
Yep.
There you have it.
Yeah.
The simple play, the simple cause and effect trial by error model. There's, and that's, and just to tie it back to the previous article, it's meaningful experiences and interpersonal relationships. That's what you get from free play. That's what builds life skills. That's what builds behavior, response inhibition, self-control, emotional control. That when you gain those skills, you're going to improve academically.
And Matt, you talked about it. What you're talking about is experiential learning and imaginative play, where they're able to just use what's in their environment and play. What is the joke always that the kids end up playing with the box
right,
the toy half the time because the toy's battery dies or something else happens and they want to climb in the box and make it a fort and make it a house and make it a freaking, I don't know, spaceship, like who knows. And I think that's encouraging that. But what I'm thinking of with this article is what can we as speech pathologists in a school, in a clinic, in private practice, wherever we are, how can we incorporate some of those ideas into what we do? And I know we only get them for a short time, but who's to say you can't do speech pathology and speech therapy? And just like Mike, you've talked about going out on field trips with your private practice patients. Why can't we do that and incorporate that into more of what we do?
I remember a few months ago, or maybe even a year ago, the ASHA leader had an article about an SLP in private practice who does all of her sessions in a pool. I thought that was one of the coolest things ever. And it showed some pictures of her, you know, having her sessions with kids in the pool and doing different games there. I thought that was incredible.
How did I miss that? I haven't seen that because
I'm sure you can Google it and find it, but that was the possibilities of being in a pool and the different games you can play there. Just, you can just think of all the language you can elicit, all the different games. And obviously getting that type of real estate would be incredibly hard.
Yeah.
Her name is Nanette Cote out of Naperville, Illinois.
There you go.
Oh, not far.
I will give the link in the Facebook chat for you, Michelle, and then I will put it in the show notes for everybody else.
So the school I was at in Colorado, a lot of multiple disability special needs kids, right? They weren't just deaf or just blind. So there was a group of students who were blind plus another diagnosis, and they were in our special needs classroom. And myself, it was set up by our adaptive PE teacher. It was a weekly trip to the YMCA to the pool. We took them swimming. And myself, a physical therapist, one of the assists, the aides, the adaptive PE teacher. So we had speech, PT. They were getting, like, we would rotate kids during our hour to 2 hours that we were there with each of their therapies. And that's when I saw those kids for one of their sessions each week. And Mike, almost what you were saying, that I saw huge improvement because I was out of their school environment doing speech therapy, that I could support the physical therapy goals because I saw her working on them in the pool with them. And I could also throw in games and activities and language things that she could support my goals while we were in the water. It was so cool. And I need to read that article you just linked, because I also love anything that's related to swimming and water. So
out here in Philly, we have ESY in the summertime. Do you guys know what that is?
Yeah. Extended school year.
Extended school year. So in my clinic, I had a few clients who did ESY, where they would go to school from 8 to 1 or 8 to 12, whatever it is. And there were certain weeks where they would not go to ESY, where they would do outside camps, where they would do sports and archery and science projects outdoors. And I would see them afterwards around like 4 or 5 p.m. after camp was over or ESY was over. And the days where they had camp were by far much more productive, incredible sessions than compared to days when they were in ESY. They were more attentive, more verbal, more flexible. It was incredible. They were outside. They were in the sun. They were interacting with peers. They were getting exercise. It was incredible. And days when they were at ESY, they'd be sitting there doing math worksheets, doing language worksheets. They were getting speech services, OT services, PT services. But the benefits of being outdoors and exercising, it was clear to me. It was clear to the parents. It was clear as day.
Well, and this is kind of similar to why I do at the high school level. You know, I've got my reading comp kids, and those are usually the higher functioning kids in the general pop. But for some of my multiple handicap or multiple disability, however you classify those students, we'll do a lot more. I hate to refer to play activities, but, you know, if it's a social skills group, we're playing phase 10. Because it's more natural. We're going to play, you know, with my multiple handicap kids, we're going to do following directions from a Lego kit versus the worksheets that they're doing in the classroom, just because there is more engagement.
Yeah, there's a Lego group in the same town where I have my practice, and they have it set up beautifully where the entire group has to work together to attain a goal and do the Legos in a certain way. And everyone, there has to be a lot of communication and teamwork. Anytime you can incorporate that, like when I look back at my school, middle school and elementary school, I remember those kinds of group projects where it was a lot of teamwork and all of those things. I remember going out and doing things with my friends, like you were talking about, Matt, with your kids. That's like being 30 years old now and having hindsight and being able to look back. That's what I remember about my childhood, is going out with my friends and doing stupid stuff. I don't remember playing video games. I don't remember doing worksheets.
Well, slightly related to this, there's a article out of the University of Exeter. It's in, where is it at? The Southwest, what is it? Devon, Southwest England, United Kingdom. But they're saying that just 10 minutes of social interaction a day improves the well-being and overall quality of life of patients in dementia care. They said the average patient in this study receives 2 minutes a day of social interaction. Yeah, wow. 2 minutes. And again, it goes back to what I do with my therapy. You know, we spend the first 10 minutes of therapy just talking, just socializing. I don't even take their blood pressure when I walk in for home care. Like, no, like I have to get vitals. But the first...
No, I had to think, because I'm like, you're not talking about school. You're talking about...
Yeah, my home health care. Like the first 10 minutes I walk in and we do nothing but just socialize. It's, how are your family? My kids did this. How's your husband or wife? What are your grandchildren doing? Even if they don't remember and they give the really general answers of, oh, they're great. Tell me all about yours. You know, the redirection that they do because they don't have the answers. We do just social conversation for 10, maybe 15 minutes, depending on how the patient is. Because sometimes if they're depressed, I will give them an extra 5 minutes of social. And, you know, and it works out that, you know, right as we're about wrapping up, I'm starting to, you know, get out the blood pressure cuff. And I'm like, oh, tell me all about whatever. Let me squeeze your arm here and get your blood pressure. I'm just going to take your temp. 2 minutes a day, though. And again, kind of going back to the idea of more recess, or, you know, socialization.
Mm-hmm. I think that that speaks to the importance of the recreational therapists and the other programming that needs to be available at SNFs, at skilled nursing facilities. You're talking home healthcare too,
yeah.
But I've seen it in a couple places that I've worked for PRN, for skilled nursing facilities. There's a drastic difference between them, between what we would consider, and you pay the price for it too, day per day cost for a SNF. But I mean, the people who bring them together and bring social events and bring performers and bring, you know, movies and music and all those sort of things are so important so that they can interact with each other, but also visitors.
So, Michael, I was actually just thinking about this. Kind of going with our screen time conversation earlier and the idea of more recess and social interaction for patients with dementia. How does, and if you don't feel comfortable answering this, feel free. But, like, how would, like, teletherapy and video therapy adversely or positively affect a situation like this? So we were just talking about the importance of, you know, that face-to-face conversation, that reading the body cues, the playing with a log, the I'm talking to my patients and holding their hand, you know, especially if it's a little lady or a little man, just shaking their hand is such a empowering thing for somebody. How does, like, that teletherapy, I don't have an answer, so I'm literally asking you as the expert. Does teletherapy have an impact on that?
Do you do teletherapy, Mike?
I do not.
Okay.
I was just thinking of the screen time part of it.
Yeah, I am incredibly limited in teletherapy. I know very little about it. So I, in my experiences with it, I've always thought of it as more of a last resort. If you're in more of a rural area or an area where services are really hard to get, or, you know, any issues with insurance, or you need to work with a specialist in a certain area, I've always thought of teletherapy in that aspect. I could be completely wrong. If there's any teletherapists out there that want to prove me wrong, you should definitely contact the podcast. I don't know for sure, but if therapy is readily available face-to-face, if it's not that hard to find, that's definitely where you should go.
Oh, okay.
See, I really would love to hear from somebody who does teletherapy more regularly. When I was looking for jobs in West Texas, I had an offer for a school district in New Mexico that wanted me to do teletherapy. And it's not my personal top choice, but I also just don't know enough about it. I know when I went to ASHA in Denver, the Denver Children's Hospital, I forget which children's hospital there, I went to one of their presentations on it, but they talked about how it's kind of a mix of in-person and teletherapy. So it's not that you only are over a screen, that the kid meets you and they do training as well with the kid, where you're on a screen in the room next door and the kid walks over and sees you so that they can get that reality piece of they're not a video game or a not real person, that they've met you in person for the evaluation, and then you can do some treatments and you do follow-ups in person. So it limits the trips of a rural family living really
that makes sense
clinic. But my concern would be I personally wouldn't want to do it if I couldn't at some point do the evaluation and do it in person. There's just so much about language that is environmental, and I don't think I could get that on an eval over a screen.
Agreed.
But I'd love to hear from somebody who does that, because I don't have that expertise.
That silence is the three of us going,
yep. Help us out.
And you can.
Maybe Abby from Little Rock knows something.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. You can do that. You can email us speechscience2018@gmail.com. That's a new email. We're on the Gmail boat, or you can go to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, and you can give us a phone call, 503-345-6740. All right, Michael, you're an NBA guy, right?
Somewhat.
Somewhat. Michelle, do you watch NBA?
Basketball?
Yeah, you're about the same as I am.
I used to coach basketball. I love basketball, but I'm not a big...
I hate basketball. I think it's boring until March, and then that's about it. And I only cared about the NBA because LeBron James made the Cavs important, and I didn't even know Ohio had an NBA team until LeBron came.
Wow, Matt.
Yeah, so I made it like 18 years before I realized Cleveland had a team. And I only live 4 hours from Cleveland. So, you know. But that same LeBron James, the GOAT, the king, he's starting a school out in Akron. It's called the I Promise School. It's for 240 at-risk Akron school children. Let's see. I Promise was built through a partnership between the Akron Public Schools and the foundation, LeBron James's foundation. And they'll welcome third and fourth graders at 400, whatever, that's in Akron. By 2022, they hope to have first grade through eighth grade with nearly 1,000 kids. And from what I was reading on this, it looks like... Oh, here you go. They'll get a daily breakfast with their teachers, daily time for social emotional learning to develop habits of promise, belonging, and a sense of community, a supportive circle after lunch each day to help kids unwind from recess and refocus on learning, and the infusion of the so-called habits of promise, which is perseverance, perpetual learning, problem solving, partnering, and perspective. They'll get 2.5 meals a day, busing for a 2-mile radius. They get a bike and a helmet. And if they graduate from there, they get scholarships to Akron University.
So being a sports fan, I know how many LeBron haters there are out there. No matter what he does, people are always going to rip on him because he went to Miami for a few years. It's insane how many haters there are.
Yeah,
just based on this school thing alone, I've seen people comment on posts saying, oh, with his money, he could have opened 4 schools. He could have opened 5 schools. No matter what he does, there's going to be internet trolls completely hating on him. But every single thing about this is good, and it is great, and LeBron is the man for doing this. This is one of the coolest things an athlete has done in a long time. And this is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. And he should be nothing but praised for it.
Now, I love that it's in his hometown. I mean, how many of us would love to be able to do something for the place where we grew up?
So the only negative I can find about this, they said the school, when it's at capacity, will cost about $8 million a year to run. And LeBron is paying, his foundation and him are going to be paying a little over $2 million a year. So they're saying that unless there's more fundraising involved, the Akron City Schools will have to pay for about $6 million a year of the school.
Okay.
Well, hopefully they find that.
Yeah. But did you see how they did the initial year funding? Did you see that?
No.
LeBron James raffled off like 150 pairs of game-worn shoes. And when you bought a pair of game-worn shoes, one of the shoes gets put up on the wall in the school and you get to keep the other one signed by LeBron James. So,
all right.
Pretty darn cool. Now, my question is...
So if they run into trouble, I'm sure they could get some funding from the Trump Foundation.
Who says that he is a Michael Jordan fan because of all this. But my question is, and I'm not raining on the LeBron James parade, because I became a LeBron James fan, actually, of him as a person the year he actually made the decision, the year to go down to Miami. I was going to Kent State for leveling courses, and it was his annual bike drive. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of it.
Every year he gives out like 100 bicycles and helmets to kids that have straight A's in the Akron City Schools. So if you get your straight A's, he gives you a bike and a helmet. And the reason behind it is that he feels that his bike was the reason that he was able to ride away from danger get out of the problem areas of Akron, ride to the basketball court, go home, go to school. So that's why he gives the kids bikes. He feels that it's what saved him and got him to where he needs to be. So I became a fan of him during that point, and also the decision, all the commercial costs went to the brothers and sisters.
Yep.
The brothers and sisters program.
The boys and girls.
Thank you. But my only question for this is is it scalable? Is this a model that we should look at for more of our ED students, our emotionally disturbed students, our problem students, the kids that don't come to class? And is something like this even copyable? We don't have a LeBron James here in Cincinnati. The closest we got recently would be Ken Griffey Jr., someone that was born in Cincinnati and then came back to play in Cincinnati.
You and Matt Harvey.
How is the enrollment?
But he wasn't born in Cincinnati. Say what?
How is the enrollment working for the I Promise School?
So from what I read, it's the at-risk kids. Let's see. You guys talk while I think about this, while I find this out. Or I'll just cut out this dead time.
Could we scale it back? I don't know.
So, Michelle, well, who's your favorite basketball player?
Well, so the day is going to run from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. July through May to eliminate what educators call the slide over the summer.
Oh, so they're kind of doing a year-round
model. Yeah, they only have 7 weeks off, and they will offer STEM-based camps. But how do they get the students? It just says 240 at-risk school children will get their first glimpse.
Okay.
So I don't know how they're doing the 240 children.
Huh. Yeah, I'm intrigued how they're going to do enrollment, if it's lottery, if it's hand selection.
It might have to be a lottery. I mean, yeah. If you're a single parent, I mean, something like this could be a lifesaver.
Oh,
you can actually go to work all day.
Mm-hmm.
9 to 5.
Yep. And they offer programming. I saw as well that the school is offering GED classes for parents.
Yes,
as
well, I forgot about that.
Job training opportunities. Yeah.
Okay, so they're already here we go. The I Promise School's targeted population will be similar to students in the current program. There's already an I Promise program that LeBron started to help avoid kids from being dropouts in high school. And once the eligible students are identified, they'll be selected through a random lottery system because there are more students in need of intervention the program can take in. The public school system has run lotteries for other programs, so the process will be fair and equitable.
Okay.
But you know what, though? That is like a lottery hit. If you're one of the 240 kids...
Yeah, I mean that you're right. It could be completely life changing.
So there you go, Michael. Are you going to start your own I Promise School in Philadelphia?
I would love to. Yeah. I would do it. I would do it in New York, though.
Oh yeah.
No, actually Philly, because the schools here are terrible.
Are they really?
Oh, so bad.
Oh, well, wait. Who did we hit? Michelle? We knew someone that worked in Philly schools, didn't we?
No, I was going to, I considered doing Teacher America out there. I was
no, that, we're thinking of, I'm thinking of the one that married a doctor that we went to grad school with from Trinidad.
Well, oh yeah. Well, Kim was from,
I wasn't going to use her name, but okay.
Okay. The first name, you just said where she's from and she married a doctor.
Okay. Okay. I guess I limited that, but yeah, I mean, but are they really that bad out there, Mike?
Yeah, the Philadelphia school district is struggling a bit.
Okay. Well, good on LeBron. I like this idea.
I like it too.
They don't mention any special education, but I wonder if that'll be part of it.
Of course.
I'm going to apply next year.
They mentioned the mental health counseling.
That's true.
There you go. So that's the right step. Are you looking for a job there, or?
Well, I think it would be cool. I might get to meet LeBron James and work okay. So we all get into this field to like make life changes. And I think we do make changes in our students' lives, but could you imagine like being part of that program, like the initial part of that program and seeing those initial 240 kids go through life and know that their lives have changed incredibly by you? Just saying.
That would be amazing.
That would.
Hopefully more athletes follow suit. Hopefully there's a Tom Brady school and a Mike Trout school. We'll see what happens.
And a Ryan Howard for the Philadelphia guys.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. When we come back from the break, I got a cool story about a tattoo, which I guess you don't normally hear. And we do want to hear from you. So email us speechscience2018@gmail.com or hashtag speechscience or give us a phone call 503-345-6740. You're listening to Speech Science.
Hey, everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speech Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined around the globe by Michael McLeod and Michelle Wintering. I guess it's not the globe. We're all on the East Coast time zone now.
Yeah, we are in the same time zone now. I just barely made East Coast time zone.
There you go. Yeah, Kentucky's there. They don't have much in there, but they do have that. No, I love Kentucky. Have you guys seen this Facebook posting of the brother? He got his brother, the one guy got his brother's face tattooed on his arm. His brother is a man with Down syndrome, and he got his brother's face tattooed on his arm as a show of brotherly love and support.
Aww.
That's lovely.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not a tattoo fan, but like more power to him.
I will post the links in our YouTube channel. All right, let's send this thing home.
I think I would be trying to wash it off my skin for the rest of my life. Whatever that phobia being written on, I had that as a kid.
Is that a real phobia?
Oh, there's phobias for
gotta everything. Be. It's gotta
oh
be.
Oh my gosh, I got nothing. All right, so what's going on with you guys this week? Because I am tired and I want to get out of here. Not that I don't love hanging out with you guys.
Go ahead, Mike.
The same old stuff. Nothing special at all.
Nothing? Busy summer.
No, just working.
Oh, what about you, Michelle? Same old?
Hotel living right now until we can have our furniture and everything delivered.
Oh.
And baby speech science is a month old.
There you go. Good for you. Our music this week, our opening music is Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music today was The Temperature of the Air on the Bow of the Calatean by Chris Zabrinsky. It's licensed under an attribution license. And our closing music tonight, it's called Slow Burn by Kevin McLeod. It's licensed under a Creative Commons attribution license. For Michelle Wintering in Baby Speech Science, Michael McLeod, and I'm Matt Hott with two, not baby, but after baby speed sciences. I don't know. Might as well, Andrew, or one in five and keeping all night. Peace out, y'all. See you next week. Love you. Bye.